This week on the Therapy Dogs Australia podcast, we had the opportunity to sit down with Serena Lynch, the breeder and founder of M&M Companion Retrievers. This episode is best watched on our YouTube channel as Serena shares some videos of temperament assessments from her previous litters and discusses what traits are especially important for puppies that may grow up to become therapy dogs one day. There is a lot of fantastic information in here, and we will be doing a part two for this interview with Serena. Please remember to subscribe, follow and like this podcast if you enjoy it. A good review will help us a lot too. Enjoy. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Therapy Dogs Australia podcast. I'm Max, the social media manager for Therapy Dogs Australia. And with me, we've got Sam King, who's the owner of Therapy Dogs Australia. You'll notice her background's a bit different today. How are you going?
Good. We're at the clinic. It's been a pretty good day so far. So, yeah.
Good. Glad to hear that. And with us today, we've got Serena, a breeder in South Australia that we're going to pick your brain today.
That's good. How are you going, guys?
Good, good. How are you?
Yeah, good. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, well, we've definitely wanted you. We tried last week, but, you know, good old Alfred had other plans. Mm-hmm. So, we've tried again. So.
Yeah. Lovely. Yeah, we got there.
Yeah, we did. We did. Serena, just to kick it off, do you want to introduce yourself to the listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. So as Max said, my name's Serena. So I'm the breeder and director of M&M Companion Retrievers. So we breed Labradors, Golden Retrievers, and my favourite is the cross of the two, the Labrador cross Golden Retriever. And we also have an owner handler training program that we have for assistance dog clients. So we don't just breed for assistance dogs. We breed for pets, assistance dogs, therapy dogs, just basically everything. We want these dogs to be accessible as well. So I'm in SA at the moment. Our trainer's in Queensland and we do a lot of it remotely. And we've got dogs all over Australia. So that's very basic. I can go into more detail if you like.
Yeah, absolutely. Give us the full rundown.
Yeah, sweet. All right. My story started probably a while ago. So I was in the police for about 14 years. And I got sick. I had like a cancer in my jaw and I had the whole thing reconstructed and made me, I was very sick for a long time. Couldn't eat, couldn't talk. So doing interviews like this was not a possibility. I ended up getting retired from the police, as a detective, basically because I couldn't interview people because I couldn't talk for longer than 20 minutes. So this is always a big achievement for me when I can sit down and go, yep, we've got an hour or something and we can talk. And then that sort of brings me into how I got into the dogs. So, back then I was living up in Townsville and I had, my lab cross golden retriever, which is also called a Goldador, but I don't really like the designer names sort of thing. Like a lab cross golden retriever has been around for a long time, and that's how I just usually prefer to say it. And I had my Miley with me, and he's been with me since I started in the police. And as I got sick, just his intuition was just phenomenal, and by the time that I was well enough to be able to try and move, basically, get out of the house, sit up, that sort of stuff, he was getting too old to sort of go through any official training. So I sort of started looking at what's available, what we can do. But, you know, he was 9 or 10. I was like, okay, now look, he's just too old. Let's call him my unofficial assistance dog.
Yeah.
So he would only ever go places that was dog friendly. So, you know, with my physical conditions, developed a lot of psychological conditions, PTSD, anxiety, depression, as well as complex PTSD from the police as well. So that left me quite isolated, but I found I could step out of the house with my dog. And I thought that was, you know, a really powerful thing. And so I started looking for a breeder in Australia that bred these dogs. And I was really after a Labrador cross Golden Retriever so I could try and get a similar temperament to Milo. And you know, the more research I did, I found that they were actually a lot more commonly used, especially in working roles, like and assistance dogs, service dogs in the US. They're actually more frequently used than we think.
Okay.
They look the gene for their coat is the Labrador trait. That's the dominant trait. So they actually look more like Labradors. It's very rare to get. So Moon, who I showed you before, is a Lab Cross Golden Retriever, and he looks like a Labrador. It's very rare to get long-haired black Golden Retrievers, or brown ones, or things like that. Like you can get them, but it's not a common thing. So the more research I did, the less I found available. And so like one of the main research articles that stood out to me was the trainability for the Labrador Cross Golden Retriever, that they're actually 70% more likely to finish their training than the original, like than the original breed. And obviously there's a lot that goes into that. And you've got the parents and the training that they do, but that was something that really stuck with me. Anyway, so I won't go too far into that because I'll go off on a tangent.
No, this is good. This is interesting. Yeah. Anyway.
So I was looking for a Goldador, and I couldn't find a breeder in Australia that did any of the health testing, had a program that, you know, help set the dogs up for success. There was nothing that, you know, there was plenty on Gumtree, like let's just spit out a litter. And so now by this stage I'd signed up with a US lady called Bad has programs called Badass Breeder, Jeanette Foley. And I listened to theater programs, a lot of her podcast, and learned what I could there, because back then there was nothing. So this would have been 2019, 2020. There was no resources in Australia for breeders, like nothing there for us to go, teach me how to do this. So the only way that I got taught was by doing work experience with other breeders and communicating with people. And you know, I got a lot of pushback from breeders. A lot of people didn't want to share their knowledge or actually tell me what was going on.
Wow, really?
And you know, trying to, you know, source dogs, I just got all sorts of abuse. And you know, there was a wall put up with most people, and that was really disappointing. So I'm really big on transparency in everything that I do with my dogs, because I think that's really important for the pet owners to see everything that we do, and understand why we do it. So I couldn't find a Labrador Cross Golden Retriever. Couldn't find a breeder. So I thought, all right, I'm gonna try and do my own. Maybe. So I got a Labrador, and his name's Max. He's an American Labrador, absolute sweetheart. He's my therapy dog. So he's qualified with Story Dogs, and we do that locally as well as better nursing homes. And he's now in the transition of just doing some assistance dog training, just so we can show what he's actually capable of. Max is a beautiful boy. And then so sort of I've got him. Just I guess I wasn't initially going, okay, I'm definitely going to breed. I'm just going to go, let's see what this dog is like. Let's, you know, see what his behavior, his temperament, his trainability. And then, you know, when he's old enough, let's look at health testing and just see if it comes together. So I wasn't sort of pushing it in the direction, it just sort of fell that way. And then another little part of the story is I was up in Townsville, and had been hospitalized for my mental health, and I was in a really crappy state. And I was sitting there one day going, what would make me happy? I'm like, I had Max and Milo at this time, but I was like, you know what? Hanging out with a litter of puppies, would totally make me happy. I got on the internet and I found a breeder who was about 20 minutes away from me. Her name's Lynn from Lynn the Door Retrievers. And I called her up and I was like, "Hi, you don't know me. I don't want to buy a dog, but I would love to come for puppy cuddles. Can I come?" And she's like, "Sure, come on over." And I just remember laying there with a litter of puppies. You know, they're about 5 weeks old and they were all over me. I just went in and laid in their pen. She's like, "Oh, there's a bit of wee poo." I'm like, "I don't really care." And just the joy, the pure joy that I felt. I hadn't felt that in a really long time. And that was really special. I was like, okay, I also want to share this joy with people. Like, I want others to be able to experience that. And, you know, so that really got me motivated. And Lynn welcomed me into her home. Like, and we're best of friends. She's just
Oh.
retiring from breeding now. But she welcomed me. I started basically nearly living there. And she let me help with their puppies, whelp them, you know. Help with the raising, you know. I was learning stuff as we were going, and she would be open to hear those sort of things. And she just shared with me everything that she could. And so she's, you know, she was one of the few breeders that would actually, you know, sit there with me and share. And, you know, we go back and forth all the time now. So Lynn played a like a really vital role in that. And I learned a lot from her. But also got me asking a lot more questions. And then, yes, I go to the Badass Breeder. And then I'm also a member of the International Working Dog Breeders Association. And they've got on their website their whole breeding program. So I contacted Dogs Queensland. I was like, "Hey, just, you know, do you have resources? Do you have training programs? You know, can you train people? Like, how do I go about training these dogs, like breeding these dogs?" They're like, "Go to this website." All right, everything is there.
Wow.
Everything is there. And people, it's
The
and it's for
website
people,
again?
the International Working Dog Breeders Association. And they've got the early socialization. So it's under the early socialization week by week socialization guide. They've got pre-whelping weeks 1 up to 9. It's really detailed. And that would be why
And
people.
this is their stuff in line with the Badass Breeder.
It is very similar. It is very similar. It's a lot more detailed. One of the things that the Badass Breeder has stopped doing is ENS and ESI. So that's early neurological stimulation and early scent introduction. So she stopped doing that because, from what I've heard, it was just time versus benefit. It's really hard to tell with that. There's not a lot of research. We do it and we think it's really important. I know that you guys think it's important. And the International Working Dog Breeders Association runs that as well, the ENS. So it's a lot more detailed than the Badass Breeder. But what I do is I used a bit of both, what I find works for my dogs, for me, and sort of put it together. And then one of the big things I loved with the Badass Breeder is their temperament testing. And you know, that's what we're here to talk about today. So my way of getting there.
And have you read the Puppy Brain by Kerry Nichols?
The puppy brain.
It's just called Puppy Brain. Have you read that?
Oh
I
no.
started it, like I only got a little bit into it and then I forgot about it. But you know what I mean. I think it might have been Jeanette from Badass Breeder that recommended it, maybe.
Yeah, Kane, I don't think I've read that one.
No, I haven't read it. That sounds good
No.
though.
Yeah. And I've got a whole lot of books in my Amazon that I haven't got to yet.
They're all in my Audible that I hear about them and then I buy them with my credits and then I forget about them and then
Yeah.
I'm like,
It's so easy to do.
I went like Anyway.
The other one I did was puppy culture as well. I found that a lot more convoluted, and but again, so I learned from that, and then got me to asking questions, what else can I find? And so the puppy culture also did some form of temperament test, but they also keep their dogs until like 12 weeks. And again, that's conflicting with research. It's actually better for the pups to be going home before they are 8 weeks of age. 7 to 7.5 weeks is the actually best time for our pups to go home before they hit their first socialization, sorry, their first fear period. But it's difficult to manage because legislation says it must be 8 weeks.
Oh,
It's a
so
bit tricky.
frustrating. Like, it really grinds my gears when legislation doesn't match, like, what is actually recommended. Like,
Don't get me started. Like,
yeah.
we've got, and then the regulations for therapy dogs and assistance dogs and breeding in general, like it just takes a long time, as we know, for legislation to catch up. And I think dogs is probably last on their list. Anyway, so
I learned that back in my dog training certificate, which was ages ago.
yeah.
And like all the working dog people, breeders, like overseas and that, of all the like police dogs and that, they all send them home 6 to 7 weeks old. 7 weeks away is perfect. Like, but then, yeah, we just don't do it.
And the
That's,
research is there to prove it.
yeah.
But it just doesn't happen. And people think, 8 weeks, actually keeping the puppy for longer is better. I'll tell you what, by the time they're 7 weeks, they are ready to go.
Yeah.
Like, they are ready for more than what we can give them. And that's providing that they're going then into a home where the people are being taught what they need to do with the dog.
True. Yeah.
Say as well
Yeah.
that if they stay with the litter for longer, they can become a bit more like more doggy, like as in they're
Yes.
worried about other dogs. Whereas if you get them home to the family, they become more like people dogs than.
Yeah. And people think that dogs are human focused, which is a trait we're going to talk about. But dogs aren't, initially bred, they're supposed to be feared, like they fear humans. So we've got to teach that human focus. And obviously now we've got generations and generations of dogs that, do know that humans are safe, but we have to teach them that we're safe. And then also we don't want them also necessarily learning all their hierarchy. We want them to be able to know how to interact with their dog, with other dogs, and what's acceptable behavior and not. But things like litter mate syndrome, standing too long with their pups, their
Yeah.
siblings, their mothers and sisters causes aggression, resource guarding, and it takes a lot to undo. So one of the main things that I found really important was making sure you get the right match, because when we look at some when we look, I know, because look at people, we've all got different personalities. We spend a third of our life trying to figure out what we're going to do with our lives, training for what we want to do. People just think they can get a dog and it can do what they want it to do. But is that fair on the dog? Does that dog have the personality traits that it needs to do that role? And what are we actually asking of that dog? And one of the main things I always ask, what is that dog initially bred for? What is their role in life?
Yeah.
Because if we can out-train some things, but you've got a hunting or a working dog, they're going to want to be working, 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 working. They're not going to be sitting on Sam's couch like that, having a snooze.
Working Labrador, how dare you?
He is. They've got to know their on and off switch. If they have a border collie or something like that, they're not going to know that on and off switch as easily. It's dog for the job. You got to have the right dog for the job.
I think about
Absolutely.
this sometimes. So, oh, sorry, I didn't realize you're talking all glitchy on my end. Sorry, I was talking over everyone. We have the same color Yeti.
Oh, love my Yeti. I live
I
with
just
my
got
ease.
chewed up. My livestock guardian dog found it for me and brought it up to the house.
Oh, what a good doggy.
Way it was accidentally damaged. She kept pulling in and out of her mouth 1,000 times and went.
Like, Mama, did you a favor?
It to the house.
It
Really damaged. Now it upsets my sensory profile every time I have to touch it.
so pretty.
Sorry for interrupting you because it was glitchy on my end, so I thought you stopped talking. But I think about this sometimes as well, because I really consider breed as well. And but then the differences within drive level within a certain breed or a litter, because this is just something I've been thinking about, right? Because this is why. I'll tell you why. I've got this Anatolian Shepherd. It's our livestock guardian dog that I'm training. And show you a picture of her. And she came from a breeder, and they ask, like, are you doing this big one here?
Oh, wow.
With Nala. Are you doing guarding? Like, will she be guarding or will she be a companion or both? And we're doing both. So they, you know, like they're asking their questions and stuff. But I think so many people have them as pets, which blows my mind because I just can't believe this is a pet. But at the same time, there's Anatolians in the litter, like there would be Maremmas and like there would be Saponex or whatever that aren't don't make good guardians. They just don't have what it takes. So when I was researching the breed, someone said it's about 30% just don't have what it takes to be a guardian. So those ones go to like pet homes, you know? I just think it's really hard to know within a litter, like which ones, because I question Kiki every day. Do you have what it takes to eventually behave yourself and be a good guardian dog?
Yeah. Did that breeder do, were they able to give you any advice or do any testing for that for you? Oh, excellent.
Yeah, we got like a good one, like from the litter, you know, but still every day I'm like, oh my God, because she's just, I don't know, sometimes this why is it so difficult?
How old is she?
13 months.
Okay. She's still going to be pushing boundaries.
Yeah, they reckon until like they reckon they don't mature till 2 or 3, like large breed.
Oh, that's exactly the same as your therapy dogs. Like, not every dog is going to be able to handle the work in a therapy role. It can be really intense, and a lot of emotion is put in that dog. We want to know, does this dog enjoy it? Are they doing it because they have to? Like, are we going to overwork them? Are they just going to hate it? Like, we need to know, putting these dogs in these high working roles, is it something that they actually have the personality for?
Yeah, like I saw a dog the other day and I was explaining to someone when a dog is seeking out pats, that's good, but is the dog seeking out pats because they enjoy socializing, or are they seeking out pats because they're looking for reassurance? Because those are different things. And the dog that is seeking reassurance, whilst they're seeking that through human contact, if they're just seeking reassurance all day, I just don't think that that's the right profile for a dog whose job is to be an extrovert and get out there. And we want the dogs to really be having their cup filled by the job that they're doing. Otherwise, they are going to have burnout.
100%. And it's really interesting when you come to the temperament testing and you'll see some of the videos of some of the reactions to some of the dogs to certain situations. And, you know, as a breeder, you know, you're spending 6, 7 weeks with these dogs. Sometimes you've got an idea of what they might be like. You put them in this new environment with a test, and sometimes it really surprises you. You know, do they get emotionally upset by things? Are they willing to do the job? What their energy levels like there's so many things that we look at. And you know, I know my with my last year, I had an evaluation. I was so surprised with one of the results of one of the puppies. I felt sick to my stomach. So I was like, this dog can't do the role that we wanted it to do, because it doesn't, it was just too emotionally invested. Like, it got upset. You know, we don't, if we're, so one of the things we look at is tenderheartedness. If we're having a meltdown, we're having a tantrum, we're crying, we're having an outburst, what is that dog doing? What is its response? And that's something that will stay with that dog for its life. It's not going to change. So that's a really crucial one, for therapy dogs. That's one of the main ones that we sort of look at.
So just to fill everyone else in, about, so we're gonna, what we're really interested to talk to you about is temperament testing of puppies, because you're doing lots of temperament testing. So that's what we've been touching on so far. So the Badass Breeder has a temperament testing program, and she's like pretty experienced. She's over in the States and does, you know, assistance dog and therapy dog placing and stuff like that as well. I know. So one of the things that people could be asking their breeders is, are the puppies temperament tested? So some of the puppies that I've bought haven't been, like Nala wasn't properly temperament tested. But Kiki, my guard dog, was. They did do temperament testing. It's something for puppy buyers to be asking about. But one of the things that breeders have certainly been talking to us a lot about is, like, well, what do you want, like, in a puppy temperament? Because they are doing temperament testing. Some of them are new to it, some of them aren't doing it. But even the ones who are doing it and they're new to it, or even more experienced ones, they're still asking, so what do you actually want from the temper, like, what puppies do you want? So we're going to talk a bit about that, like what we're looking for. The other thing that I think is interesting for people is to just have an understanding of, like, how accurate is this? Because I know it's just a snapshot in time, really, of the puppy's development or their life, the actual temperament test itself. And what other, like you're saying, like tenderheartedness, like that's, if that's who they are, then that's who they are. But you sound like you've sort of got ongoing contact with the dogs that you've bred. So you've temperament tested them, placed them, you've bred them, tested them, placed them, and then, like, followed their life along. Do you find that the temperament assessments are, like, pretty accurate? Do you, like, see those traits continue in the dog? Because there's lots of things that can change. Like, once a dog goes home to a family, there's other things that can influence that dog's temperament from then on as well. So, because we also want to protect our puppy buyers from, if a breeder is saying, we've temperament tested this puppy, it's a therapy dog, to have the buyer also understand, no, it's not a therapy dog. It's been temperament tested and we've seen XYZ, but this is what needs to happen now, blah, blah, blah. So can you?
100%. And you can't say at 7 weeks this dog is 100% going to be a therapy dog or they're going to be an assistance dog. They've got the desired traits, which we'll go through. They've got the desired traits that we would like to see in a therapy dog. But you've got the next 8, 9 weeks in their socialization period. You've got a lot of work to do in that time. A lot of socialization exposure, taking that puppy out to as many places as you can, as safely as you can, which can be done. And then there's a lot of things that obviously the training, who they train with when they start the training, what type of training they do, if they do too much exposure. So, does a dog get attacked by like another dog that changes it? There are, or is it in a fear period and you've pushed it beyond its ability and traumatized it. And so that one of the things we when I go through my breeding, I like to educate all my clients on what we do with the puppies. And you know, when you look at the International Working Dog Association, they have red, green, yellow is the orange zone. You know, red, you've pushed that dog way too far. They are in meltdown, they've shut down. You've got to learn how to understand the dog and see what they're saying to you as well. So it's a tricky one, because you can't just go, they're going to be a therapy dog 100%. No way. We can't promise that. You know that there'll be plenty of people that can't pass your course and things like that. Because
Rena, people buy the Kool-Aid, and I'm not throwing shade at those people, because I've bought plenty of Kool-Aid myself in my life, so I get it. But people, like educated people, are being told by breeders this is a therapy dog, and by the time they bring it to us, they're like, it's a therapy dog. And I'm like, well, we'll let you know if it's going to be a therapy dog. They're like, no, it was sold to me as a therapy. And I'm like, it doesn't work like that.
It does not work like that. Well, so what are these people telling, what are the breeders telling these people? And being able to ask the right questions of the breeders, getting them to explain what they're doing, why they're doing it, how they're doing it, is really crucial. And I think I know that I found there's a lot of breeders out there that won't even discuss anything with you. They won't even pick up the phone and have a conversation. Like, anytime someone puts an inquiry, I give them a call, they're like, oh my God, no one ever calls me. It's like, well, how do you know what we're doing? Like, it's got to work two ways. It's got to be transparent. But you really got to ask the breeder questions. Like, so do they do temperament testing? Okay, they do. What do they do? How do they do it? When do they do it? Where do they learn about temperament testing? Is it something that they've made up, or have they, done a course and learned about it from somewhere? Are they a dog trainer? Like, someone said they can do it, but do they? Do they? And what do they do, and how do they do it? And you want to start with, like, what is the ultimate role? So when you're sort of looking and you're looking for a dog and you're speaking to breeders, you also want to know what is that role you want to do with that dog in the end. Because, assistance dog versus therapy dog, two very completely different roles. And I find that I have to explain that to people a lot, and you would too. hugely different roles, even within assistance dogs, guide dogs. Psychiatric assistance dogs, medical alert dogs, completely different traits that you would need for a working role. So knowing, I guess, before getting a dog, what you want ultimately is really crucial. So then you can ask those right questions and seek out what you're looking for. But there's no way people can promise you that the dog's going to be a therapy dog or assistance dog. Away.
So when a breeder is placing a puppy, so for people who haven't bought a puppy for a while or haven't bought a puppy from a reputable breeder or whatever, usually the breeder will choose your puppy for you, which is a wild concept if you've bought dogs in the past. Like, I just chose Nala. But if you have chosen a dog out of a litter before, or like Oliver was the last puppy left in a litter, and I was like, I'll take him.
Yeah,
I picked him up. So,
but it's that's so common.
They choose your dog for you. So when you're choosing, or they might give you a couple of options to choose from. Like, here are three that we think would be suitable. Yeah. So when you're doing that, Serena, we're going to talk more obviously about what you've looked at the temperament test, but you're looking at the temperament test, but you're also looking at the owner, aren't you? So you're looking at the personality traits of the owner, the household that they live in, who lives there, how much time they have to dedicate to the dog. And like you said, what is the future working role of this dog? And I just want to encourage people listening as well, if you're wanting a therapy dog, maybe talk to someone who has a dog working in the field that you want to go into, because a lot of the time when we speak to someone who doesn't have any experience as a therapy dog handler in their job yet, you don't know what the dog's job's going to be. You're just guessing. And so the breeders doesn't, it's not on them to know your working role and what's required and all that sort of stuff, and what types of things a dog will be exposed to and have to tolerate and endure on certain days. And you, as the puppy buyer, you still might not know yet either because you haven't had a dog in that environment yet. So just want to encourage people to also like reach out, like if you've got a colleague at your workplace who's already got a dog, or someone else that you've met along the way, or reach out to someone like us and ask, like, so what's actually of the dogs for this
Yeah, because
type?
there's so many different roles that they can do as well within the therapy work. I think it's also, if you've got a breeder doing the temperament testing, I think it's important for the breeder to have an understanding of what you want to be doing ultimately as well. Because, if I don't know the client, I don't know that, like you said, I need to know their household, other animals, people in their house, what training they're going to do, what the ultimate role is. All that helps me is all that helps, and that information helps me match to that dog. And I would never say to someone, you must have this dog, because I would never force a dog onto somebody that they're not happy with. But I like to give them evidence. Our temperament tests are video recorded, and then I give people a written synopsis of what it means and an explanation of the temperament testing, and then we have a discussion. So with my litters, the families are involved from birth, so they see through like a Facebook group, they see what we do with puppies, so they get connections with the puppies as well. But having that open communication at the end, I think, is really important, because you don't want to push a dog on somebody that they're not comfortable with, because that's not going to work either. And so it's a tricky one, and it's always the most stressful time for me. Always. Even with pet homes, I find it like it's just as crucial, like that we temperament test the puppies for the homes, because you want the family lifestyle to match that dog. It's otherwise you've got dogs that are being returned, they're going to shelters, they've got behavioral issues.
Yeah, they're not being returned like in pristine, like they're going to be returned with like crazy shit they've learned while they've been.
Yeah, and you don't want to, a high drive dog. Like I think you were talking about the different in different breeds. So we've got Red Fox Labradors, American Labradors, English Labradors. Red Fox Labradors are so high drive. Like they are lean and athletic. They nearly look like, foxes. Purebred Labradors, they are just go, go, go. You couldn't put them with a family that doesn't like to exercise 1 or 2 hours a day and doesn't have time for training. They are, they're intense. Whereas we've got other dogs like my Maxie, he'll happily lay with you all day. Same breed, completely different temperament. And
Do you
that's what.
find, Serena, that you ever have you ever had families looking for a particular puppy and none of the puppies have been suitable in a litter?
Not often. And I can say that because, I find that our dogs that we breed are quite reliable. So I'm not going to offer something to someone that I don't think that we have available, if that makes sense.
So like you're predict what you're predicting to come out of your mating, like you've already got an idea, you mate your dogs and then you've got an idea of what puppies they're going to produce, and that's predictable so that when people contact you as a breeder, you're able to say, well, this is the kind of dogs that we're expecting to come out of this.
100%. Yeah, that's right. And so if I don't think they're coming to me with a, they've got a dog to do, so one of the things we don't do is scent detection. So if they're coming to me, I want a diabetic alert dog. We don't do that. So I wouldn't even sign them up. Sorry. I wouldn't even sign them up for it. I'd try and find them a breeder or a trainer that can help them. So like I'm open to learning, but I have not found a lot of trainers that would be keen to teach diabetic alert stuff. That's the main inquiry we get. So I find that our dogs, because all our breeding dogs are temperament tested. I know what they're like. We make sure we match them with, something that complements them. We get fairly reliable testing. The one I was mentioning from the last litter that didn't respond the way that I thought it did, it would. That was a really big surprise for me. There's a lot the breeder can do to prepare the dogs for the temperament test.
Let's go on to the temperament testing because I know that's what everyone was going to be looking for. So you're going to take us through, is it Janelle? Janelle? Janelle.
Jeanette Foley.
From Badass Breeder. What is it? What are the domains that she tests? Give maybe a few examples of how they go about it. So to set the scene for people, the temperament test is done by someone who's not you, isn't it?
Yes, it does. So I have my other half, he does it. Because he helps with the puppies, but he's not there with them on a day-to-day basis like I am. So the temperament test is conducted about 7, 7.5 weeks of age of when the puppy's at age. And we're testing for key personality traits of that dog. And we've got stable traits and non-stable traits. So stable traits are personality traits that are going to stay the same no matter what we do with their training. So we're looking at things like tender heartedness, how human focused are they, their energy level, and I'll go through each one and which one's stable and unstable. But just for an understanding, so stable is we can say, yep, this dog is highly human focused. They love being around you, and that is going to be consistent for their life. The unstable traits are ones that can change and that can be adapted with training and environment, and also can go positively or negatively as well. So so we might say, look, so an unstable trait might be their dog's resilience and how they deal with new situations. They could be really nervous and unsure, but with the right training for that dog, we might be able to increase their nerve strength and resilience. We might be able to increase their ability to handle noises, sudden noises and things like that. If I had a, oh, I'll go into that in a minute. There's still sort of parameters in there. If you had a dog that was petrified of everything, in the test, you're not going to go, okay, let's put him in a working role because he's just not going to have the confidence to be able to see if he can adapt. So they're the ones we look at, the stable and unstable, and then we've got the traits that we focus on. So there's assertiveness with humans, and I'll just give you a list and then we can go through them. So there's assertiveness with humans, assertiveness with dogs, how confident are they? What's their motivation level and energy level? What is their nerve strength and resilience? Do they love being patted and touched and held? The energy level, like are they racing around a million miles an hour or are they just gonna plod along? Like what are they like? How are they with sights and sounds? What's their prey drive? How focused are they on humans and their tender-heartedness? So they're the traits that we look at, and the crucial ones for therapy dogs, tender-hearted, human-focused, high touch tolerance, and the energy level. For me, they're the most four ones. We can go through that later. Sorry. So each individual element that we've just run through there, they all have their own little testing in the test. So we set the test up in an area that the dogs haven't been before with all new equipment that they have never been exposed to, with either someone brand new or someone that they haven't had a lot of interaction with. And that's just so there's no sort of familiarity. And then also no bias on sort of our end. So we set that up in a room, get the video going, and we run through the test. So we put the dog in. So we'll have like a big fan, we'll have some obstacles, some different toys, some food laying around, we'll have their wee mat, we'll have things that make noises, things that are sudden. We change up the environment a little bit. So we have it all ready to go. It's a, 5 to 10 minute assessment. It's not long, but everything we do is purposeful. So we start by the tester sits in the room. We put the puppy into the testing environment and we watch what they do. We don't call them, we don't encourage them. What does that dog do? And you can get some dogs that'll just sniff around, do their own thing. Some might just hide in the corner. Some might just run straight up to the human and be like, "Oh my God, you're there! You're the best thing ever." And we let them get comfortable with it, see how they approach. We don't let it drag on too much. If they aren't sure, then we give them a little bit of encouragement. And it is really, some dogs need a lot of encouragement. Some dogs need hardly anything. And it's not really until you see the temperament test that it's real, like that it's easy to understand. It's when you can see like the complete differences in what dogs do, you go, "Oh, okay, like I get it." So we have, I make sure that we have that available. I've got heaps of temperament tests on my YouTube. So if people want to learn about it, go have a look.
What's the YouTube called? What's your YouTube?
M&M Companion Retrievers. So I have a video there that explains, and a lot quicker than what we've done today, what the temperament testing is, how we do it, and why we do it. A bunch of different temperament tests with different dogs.
That take place at the Grootle Breeders Conference. They had Badass Breeder out
Oh, yeah, cool.
was fascinating. So to set the scene, like how they did it there, for everyone who's kind of like, listening along, being like, okay. Basically, they had a couple of play, like a playpen, a couple of playpens put together in this room. Like we're in a conference room, and the assessors just goes in the playpen, and like Serena's saying, like there's just stuff in there. So there's just like random equipment and things like that. So she had like an umbrella, she had like a rolly thing, like a kid's toy that you roll on the ground and it like goes boo, 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 and it's got balls and it makes noise and stuff like that. And then this guy had all his like poodles there, poodle puppies, and he just brought them in one at a time, and you just put them in the playpen and then you just kind of like just watch them and see what they do. And then she would like kind of interact with them like a bit here and there, and then sort of like just sort of just interact with them, and then we were all scoring it. And then but yeah, they did like, I think they did like 4 or 5 puppies, one after the other. And like Serena's saying, you kind of watch the first one and you're like, "Oh, it just looks like a puppy, like it just looks like a puppy." But after you've watched the second and the third one and you can see how different they are, you're like, "Oh, I get it." So I would strongly, if you've got that stuff on your YouTube, I strongly recommend guys go and watch it, even if you're just out of interest, go and have a look.
Yeah, and I've got plenty of temperament tests here I can show you as well if you want to watch one and talk through it as we watch it. Do you think that would be better than just talking about the traits?
You can do
A
that,
great
yeah.
idea.
So I've actually got Ellie's temperament test, from Bree's therapy dog in training. So she was on last week or the week before.
Connected the dots yet? Serena is Bree's dog's breeder.
Oh yes, we didn't say that, did we? Yeah.
Oops. Can I have, am I
It's
able to
not.
share my screen?
I'm screen sharing, Max.
Yeah, I'm just changing the permissions. Try again, Serena.
All right, you can see that. So that's Scott. He's our tester. We're in a sort of just our courtyard area. You can see that a few of the things that we've got set up here. So we've got some steps. even just with the plastic versus no plastic, is a different texture, a little bridge, uneven surfaces, different toys. We have some treats over here. We've got a dog, statue of a dog over here. We've got a big industrial fan, and then he will bring out different noises as we come along. Again, a different texture. That's just a mat that's really prickly that I lay off my back. It's really sharp. And so here goes, here we've got Scott sitting down. And so we're going to bring Ellie in and have a look to see what she does. So one of the first things we're looking at is she assertive with humans? So she's gone straight in, having a sniff, tail is up. So we're wanting to look at how these dogs are, how are they moving through it? Are they happy? She's gone straight up to him. Very happy. He's not interacting with her, not calling her up. She's like, yes, I love you. Oh my goodness, give me cuddles. She's such, and
It's very
just
cute.
completely seeking that out. So when it comes to with assertiveness with humans, she definitely is assertive with humans because she's walked up to him, stood up on his back and said, give me attention. And that's not a bad thing. That's just, you know, she's happy to be with you. A dog that isn't assertive would sit in the corner and be like, I don't want anything to do with you. And
I
we
love
still.
that. I like that trait, Serena, in a therapy dog. But it ha just how assertive they are with humans is something I would consider for which handler I'm going to put them.
Yes. And what role they're doing as well, because not everybody wants a dog that jumps up on them and tends to them. And you don't want them overly excited and to be just bombarding people and being too assertive and being dominant with people. So it's, there's no clear answer either.
We know how to manage that, but the handler is a massive part of the picture there. So if the
Yeah.
dog is more assertive than the handler is, then it will be a real struggle for them to teach that dog how to interact. But certainly that like initiation of engagement is my favorite thing for therapy.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point, like the handler and the dog, what their relationship is like as well. It's and that's so crucial as well, because you could have a, you know, say if I had a female dog that I first trained as my assistant's dog, and my trainer was like, don't do it, don't do it, and I'm stubborn and I didn't listen. She was a really dominant dog. She had a lot of fear issues. I didn't get her from my program. It was kind of like a little experiment which failed epically. And she was so dominant, she didn't care what I said or did. She didn't want any bar of me. As a Labrador Cross Golden Retriever, what, not a bar of me. So you've got to also match, yeah, like you're saying, the person as well with the dog is crucial. Is that dog going to listen? And that, you know, that comes in with assertiveness, the human focus. The human focus is a big one.
How long ago was that, Serena, that you had that pup that you're talking about?
That would have been about 4 years ago.
Yeah.
She ended up, she had so many fear issues because she had no exposure as a puppy. Ended up being dog aggressive.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Really sad. She's with my mum now and is the only dog and absolutely loves it. But yeah, meeting other dogs. Yeah. So that, you know, that failed. But and it was then clear. Again, she what I temperament tested her when she got here, and she didn't temperament test well. Her temperament test is on my YouTube as well. And so we don't all listen either. People are stubborn, like, probably not going to listen.
In some ways, that's great learning, though, because she didn't do well in the temperament test. And then, like, you saw that progress later on. So,
Yeah, exactly. And then I can
yeah.
say to people, look, I got a dog from a breeder that didn't do, you know, the badass breeder or puppy culture or IWBA. They just bred them and left them, and this was the result. Or I had a dominant dog with me, and you know, this was the result. So a lot of trial and error. And I think something like that's it's a good way to go as well. Like, and I'm learning, we're all learning. So we'll just get back to Ellie so you can see here how much she loves people. Loves people. Her tail's wagging, she's up greeting. And then, like I said, it went to this, different aspects when it comes to training. And look at how quickly she's moving around the room. Oh, what's going on with this? So she found that treat straight away. So she's got a good nose drive. Have a little reward. We use that mainly, is it as a training tool? Maybe some people might want to, just do some scent work for fun. But are they motivated by treats? Is their nose down? Are they going to be too distracted? Is their prey drive that high that they're so distracted by their environment and their treats and they're just going to eat everything as well? Like some dogs will do nothing except want to eat that food and will not listen. And as a working dog, they've got to ignore food. Can't go take the kids' lunches and they've got to learn.
Just drive in general, like when that drive's really high for anything, that can be hard for us because these aren't sport dogs, they're therapy. So we want a medium drive in the dog.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Work, but not be so amped by whatever that it's hard to get their focus,
Yeah. Or they just, all they want is that ball. And that's it. Then they will lift that ball and they'll bark until they get it. Like, yeah, that doesn't work as a therapy dog. They've got to have that off switch. They've got to be able to do what's needed of them. And so Ellie's walking around here quite confidently over the step, not an issue. So our confidence is an unstable trait. So we can develop their confidence with the right training. Obviously, we do want a dog that is confident without being overly boisterous and obnoxious. Happy to take on tasks. Some slight hesitation is okay. But we don't want them there stalled for longer than 3 seconds going, I don't know what to do, I'm going to shut down. But you can see her confidence is good. She's tackling things. She does need a little bit of encouragement with the play, but she is happily moving through. A dog that wouldn't even tackle any of the obstacles, and had a low confidence, I would not place in a therapy dog role, because basically you're pushing shit uphill. Like, why would you? The dog is just, it doesn't want to work. It doesn't, it doesn't have that desire. There's only so much you can do in training as well. So I just wouldn't then put them in a therapy role. If they're really unconfident, like that's the right word. And as she's moving around for the entire thing, we're also looking at her motivation level. So motivation level is a stable trait. You're gonna, like we're talking about the prey drive, work drive. Are they going to work? Are they just going to plod along and do what they need? They're going to sit and do nothing. So we're looking that way at that overall as well. How are they moving through? Ellie's got medium good motivation. She's not running through at a million miles an hour. So here's another, we put the tarp on. So that was a visual. Oh, that's scary. How do they react? They've got time to, it's not an issue if a dog startles at something. We just want them to be able to recover. So it's like the 3 second, with 3 second, well, she would have heard me talking. I'm really bad in these. I talk too much sometimes. She's like, come on. So her motivation level, I really liked for a therapy dog. It's not, she's not slow and unmotivated, but she's moving through it at a good pace and happy to work. But also sort of being respectful. Like when he laid out the tarp, she sort of went, okay, I'll wait. So that's the popper as well that you were talking about. That's for our noise. So you've got Your noise and sight sound sensitization. So we have the tarp, the fan, the popper that we use for the noise. Some dogs get absolutely petrified when they hear that. They put their tail between their legs and they run away. The same way we've got a big industrial fan, we put on big sudden noises. And sound, we get an umbrella, which you'll see in a minute, and open that up. These traits that we're looking at, the sight and sound sensitivity, plus their nerve strength and resilience, these are unstable traits. So these are traits that can be adapted in time with the little bit unsure there, see? Little bit unsure, but she's coming back to investigate. That was the big fan. Tail still going. Okay, I'm going to go back and have a look. It's okay. So she's under the 3 seconds. She's recovered. Oh, wait. Oh, no. But she is okay. She hasn't shut down or melted down. This is one of
Scary umbrella.
the big umbrella. Whoa.
Oh, man. Puppies are so cute. Maybe I should get
They
one.
are. Yeah.
So a startle, like I said, a startle is okay as long as they recover within the 3 seconds. When we test for assistance dogs under the PAT test, that's what they're after. If your dog startles or something, it's okay as long as they don't lose focus and they can come back to what they were doing. When I get a dog that is super scared of things, it is a surprise because we do a lot of time, we put a lot of time into noise sensitization and things like that in our breeding program, but it does happen. And that's just the dog. So I'd be definitely looking there for a dog that had so medium to high nerve strength and resilience so that they show adaptability, that they're happy to learn. Yes, they might get startled or they're not sure, but they want to keep going, and they want to keep learning, and it doesn't sort of emotionally upset them too much. So she's still happy to keep going. We can have dogs. I'll turn this volume up. We can have dogs that will just hide in the corner. Why do they get dogs that wee themselves? They get so scared. But those things we can adapt, but you still wouldn't want to be putting a dog in there that was scared of everything into a working world. They still need to have some of that resilience and ability to adapt to new environments. And as you said, Sam, this is a trait that all the training impacts it hugely.
Yeah, when we do the temperament assessment with the dog when they're got trying to pass their final assessments, if something shook the dog before the assessment started or at the beginning of the assessment or whatever, some dogs don't recover during the assessment. We just can't assess the dog because we've got to do our handling and we can't do our rough handling on a dog that's already shook from something else because it can cause them a lot of dramas to be pushed over the edge. Like we do see that, and it is a massive red flag. Like, why has the dog now been feeling this way for this long? Like, showing me that this dog doesn't have bounce back. Like, whereas I offended a dog the other week with my weird head patting. And he was like, "That's very strange, lady." Like, "I know, it's for the assessment." And he was like, "No, thank you." And he was just looking at his mum and he was like, "Let's go." And I was like, "All right, let's go decompress the dog. Like, let's just take him for a little walk." We took him for a little walk into a different area because I've got to do more handling. I've got to keep touching him, but I don't want to keep pushing him when he's like that, saying, "I don't feel comfortable with you. You don't know how to pat dogs." So we took him to a different area. He had a little run around and then he immediately came back and repaired that little relation, came and made friends with me again. And I did the rest of his handling and he was fine. So that dog recovers,
But you were able to respect his boundaries as well and pick up on his cues that he's not comfortable. Let's not push him too far. Give him something enjoyable to do and reassess, which is crucial as well.
It's very important as our job as the assessor to not push the dog to a point where they do have to give me a distance increasing signal, like a growl or a snarl or a snap or a bite, because those are just you getting cancelled dog. Like those are over the line. But if I push him over the line, then that doesn't make sense. Like then the whole idea behind the therapy dog isn't that we just let people do whatever they want to our dogs until the dog eventually finally snaps. And it's also not that we just need bomb-proof dogs. That's not what we need, because the dog has a handler who's with them all the time and who can advocate for them. And we don't have extended periods where people continually offend the dog. What we do have is short periods where people will offend the dog, and then the handler steps in and advocates and redirects and does whatever. So that clumsy patting on the head, that is going to happen. And his response to that was appropriate. Like he sort of went, looked at me like, you don't know what you're doing. And then went over to his mum and just looked at her, like put his head like on her. Was like, get me out of here. And I was like, mom doesn't like me.
So my moon, my assistant's dog would not cannot be a therapy dog. Brilliant assistant's dog for me, but he's just like, get away from me. Like, I don't want all these randoms touching me. Like, I'm not okay with that. Like, and you've got to watch their cues. Their whale eyes is a big one, and they're yawning, they're lip smacking, the tail between their legs, their ears back. Like, it's crucial that people understand that. So, doing it, if they are getting a therapy dog, I always encourage the person to get into the training straight away, because there's more to, it's not just a well-behaved dog either. There's just so much into it. Like, yeah, there's so much into it. I'll move. So we had a look. We when she went past the dog statue, there was an assertiveness with dogs. That was back here. She just walked around it, not assertive with dogs. Some dogs will jump up on the statue and want to dominate it, or get up in their face. That's an assertive dog. That really only matters if they're going to be working with other dogs or they're in a household. So you've got a household where you've got already a dominant female. I wouldn't be putting a second dominant female in there. It's just too hard. So that one more I use for placement with the right homes, not necessarily therapy dog roles, because we want dogs getting on, and not all dogs get on. And having multiple dogs in your house, you guys would know that it can be hard work. So we want to get that match right as well.
So tender-heartedness, Serena, that's something that for me, I guess on all these traits, I keep coming back to like, I want it somewhere in the middle. I want it somewhere in the middle. My view on tender-heartedness is really that I want a dog that is open and available with that, but not super impacted by someone's emotions. Is
Because you
like,
want them to know when someone's in distress or.
but like not be necessarily really impacted by that themselves, because my job, for example, could be 6 to 8 clients in a day, and if Nala's taking on all of their stuff all day, like that's a lot
That's
of
a lot.
load for a dog. Like I don't want a dog that's gonna have all of that. But if I was gonna like planning on going to and do nursing home visits or something like that, maybe I would look for something that's a little bit more tender-heartedness, because there's gonna be shorter visits, maybe once a week, and maybe it's not that big of a load on the dog. But depending on the job and depending on where we're going, I think it's a great skill for and a great trait for dogs to have. But certainly when we have tender-hearted dogs that come through our training, we always warn the handler that this dog's going to need a lot more self-care that you have to provide. So they need a lot more time, a lot more time to repair and rest from that. Otherwise, I think we can see them burn out and become impacted by taking on everyone.
100%. The tender-heartedness is the, if you're going to look at one trait, for a therapy dog role, that's the one you really need to look at, and that would be the most important one. So when we say tenderheartedness, we're looking at that basically, does the dog care? How emotionally invested are they getting into the situation? And we're just about, I was we've got I've got a few videos in tender heartness because it is really an important one. Some dogs, you know, are going to be so upset by you or that person that they're not going to tend to that person, and we need them as a therapy dog to be able to do it. But we also don't want them to be disrespectful of the person and think it's a game. So some dogs, so you'll see Scott will have a tantrum. Some dogs will be like, yeah, this is great. I'm going to jump on you. I'm going to pull your hair. Let's have a party. Like, I don't really care what you're doing. That dog is not tenderhearted. They don't really care. They're just there to play. We want, like you were saying, so we want dog in the middle. They're going to see you, they're going to respond, they're going to tend to you. A highly tender-hearted dog is going to get distressed and hide. We don't want that for a therapy dog. So I've hopefully got the volume up. Scott will do his little tantrum and we'll have a look. And this is how we test the tender-heartedness. So we'll have a look at what Scott does.
Oh, Ellie.
Very cute.
She's so sweet.
Oh.
See, I would say she's still tender-hearted, medium, because you can see her tail's between her legs. She's like, I want to make you feel better. I want to make you feel better. But she was very respectful, and she didn't withdraw from the situation. So to me, that was, you know, she is tender-hearted, but within the realm of where we want it to be. Let me
Yeah.
show you Frodo. So this dog here, I had to step in because she completely shut down with Scott. This is the only time I've ever had to step in to do the temperament test. She completely shut down. Wouldn't she just hid in the corner the whole time, would not activate or work with him at all. So I've done this here and I say she's we'll have a look and you can see the difference in response.
Okay.
That's me. That's me as a dog.
Yeah. I don't want to deal with this. That's too much.
Me
I've got
Frodo.
my own dramas going on here.
She's like, it's not my problem.
Yeah.
Look at her.
And I think she only came up to me because she knows me.
That's going to recover her.
So she did recover, but she really took that on. Look at that.
Yeah.
Really took that on. And then we've got another one. So this is one of our Red Fox Labradors cross. Oops. Red Fox Labradors cross Golden Retrievers. He thinks it's a game.
I feel like I could work with that.
There's Max in the background, and let me.
With an extent of that, because I do want the dogs. So if I think about like a school dog that like works in a school regularly 3 days a week, primary school, and kids are having meltdowns left, right, and center, I feel like a dog that is like can be ambivalent to it as they walk past, because we don't really involve the dogs in kids' meltdowns. Like we don't do that.
Yeah.
Because we're going to end up in a reinforcement loop anyway. So
Yeah.
I'm happy to have a dog that's going to go, oh, look, that kid over there is like yelling about stuff. He's on the roof now. Wild. You know, and
Yeah.
keep walking past and go, you know, like, yes, and it doesn't concern you. Let's go. And then, you know, I guess so. Both, like, I really like Ellie's video is very like, oh, that's so beautiful. Like, I can just, that's just so beautiful. Like, it's, that's so special that she's like that. And that would be, there would be so many things that you could do when you're working with a dog like that. If your dog doesn't have that, this I think is the next best thing, where it's like, it doesn't, you don't have to, you don't have to have that ability to be responsive emotionally to people all the time in a time of like meltdown or whatever.
Yeah.
I suppose, like you said also, Sam, it depends on the type of role that they're going into. So, like you said, like school therapy dog might be better off not being so affected, but maybe in like a, I don't know, like a counseling room for adults or something, they could be more
Like,
tenderheartedness or.
Serena, does tenderheartedness encompass like the dog's like overall general interest in making new friends? Like, is that income, or is that in the
You
first
mean
part?
with the humans? No, that's that would be looking. No, the tenderheartedness is, yeah, their emotional response would be looking at the human assertiveness and the human focus. How much so the human focus is a stable trait that we want high human focus for therapy dogs as well, and that's where we look at the interaction. We look at the interaction through the whole temperament test. Some dogs, you take a step, they follow. You take a step, they follow. Whatever you do, they do. Do they need a little bit more encouragement to do things, or are they just going to do their own thing? So that's where that one comes into it, definitely with the human focus. And we want them to be, aware of what we're doing.
Yeah.
We also chuck in a different one as well, where we might just, and this is more for our assistance dogs roles, where we might just go, hey. Someone might have seizures or quiet meltdowns. Not everything's outbursts like that. It might be people withdraw within themselves.
Yeah.
What does that dog do when somebody withdraws within themselves? Do they know, like, and this is something that I've just brought in over time, but I think it's an interesting to watch the difference. Are they that focused on the person that they know something's different has changed? Are they going to respond to that situation and do something about it? Or are they just going to just go, I don't really care, see you later, kind of thing. There's, yeah, and really, I think when it, there's so many different traits we can test, but what we keep coming back to is what is the ultimate role for that dog? We can't match them if we don't know their ultimate, what we want their ultimate role to be.
Need a Venn diagram of like the puppy's temperament, the work role, and the handler that's on, because all of these three things, they just have to be working together. Puppy that you could sell me would be different to the type of puppy that you could sell a first time person that doesn't have the same experience. Like, it would just be totally different.
Yeah, completely
I've
different.
got a client waiting for me, but
Sorry. We'll do a part two on this.
can we make a part two? Because I really want to talk more, like I want to ask more questions to Serena about this stuff. And I know everyone else is going to want to ask questions too. So can
Yeah,
we?
and if we can get people bringing questions in and things like that, that would be good. It's not a straightforward, it's not straightforward
At all.
at all. No. So I think that would be great.
Yeah, so anyone listening, yeah, if you've got some questions for our part two, please maybe email me, Max, at
Media.
media@therapydog.com.au,
Yeah.
and we'll.
And I'll make sure you got the link so people can have a look and look at the different temperament testing and the explanations as well, so they can do a bit of, they can have a look a bit further as well.
Yes, yeah, on the YouTube channel. Yeah.
I
I'll
definitely want
include that.
to find out what we're looking at in the handler, like what types of information from the handler helps us look at different puppies that might be sick, and they're what they've got going on at home and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much, Serena.
Guys. Well, shush. Hey.
Right, we will talk again really soon. Okay, I want to finish this conversation.
Yeah. All right.
Okay,
Thanks,
bye.
everyone. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you're interested in studying with Therapy Dogs Australia or you have a few more questions before deciding, please get in touch with us by emailing courses@therapydog.com.au or visiting our website at www.therapydog.com.au for more information and FAQs.